Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Hello and welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation, a different Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm the same Adam Pranica on all shows.
Yeah, you bring the same, you bring very plausible Adam Pranica realness to every show you do.
It's true.
Adam, we had we threw something to the fans last time we talked. What's weirder to order on a plane, soup or pizza?
Yeah.
And I think a pretty overwhelming majority of the people came down on the side that soup is far more dangerous and weird to order on an airplane.
Well, it was such an avalanche of one-sided answers. It's well outside the margin of error. It's almost unanimous.
It was a pretty short election night special.
Yeah, you can go to bed early.
Yeah.
On this election night, wow.
Not white knuckling the results at all.
Here's what I think got lost in the question and in my reason. If I could just defend myself for a moment, I plan on making a concession speech.
Okay.
I've already given you the call, Ben, and congratulated you on a great campaign.
I love when the concession speech is going on and some wise ass that like wasn't that bought in on the campaign anyways hits the switch on the nets that are holding all the balloons and confetti against the ceiling.
Yeah, that's a great guy. That's your guy?
That's fucked up. Yeah.
You know, the spirit in which I meant soup over pizza was never about safety, of course. Mm-hmm. Soup at any speed is dangerous. And I don't support that choice for a variety of those reasons. My reason for choosing soup was purely culinary. Like, I feel like soup was a more guaranteed good-tasting thing to eat on a plane than what I would assume. Like, I've never gotten a good cup of coffee on an airplane, and I was sort of applying that to pizza as well. Like, I know coffee is coffee and it'll do in a pinch, but I wasn't going to get a slice of pizza that I could deal with just being okay, and I thought soup would be more of a sure thing.
Huh. See, here's the thing. I've had, like, maybe, outside of chowder, maybe five good bowls of soup in my life.
Chowder is always any foods that you actually like. God, I feel like this is a bit. Is this a
soup
bit?
Soup in general is not that good.
Ben doesn't like food. Like this,
I love food. I like good food. Like if I have a choice between any kind of soup and any kind of chowder, I'll go with a chowder. If I have a choice between a chowder and a stew, that's a tougher call.
I love a stew. Give me that. I have to have a stew because most of the time the chowder is going to be larded up with dairy.
Come out looking exactly the same as it went in.
I think it would surprise people how not that close we are.
Well, how close can two weirdos like us ever be to anyone.
I was thinking about this today. I don't like to assign rank in this way, but in terms of people I talk to the most,
yeah,
you have got to be my best friend. I don't talk to anyone as much as I talk to you.
Yeah, well, a lot of that is just like the you know, the gun at our heads of capitalism.
Right.
Because now neither of us can really get gainful employment as videographers because we've spent so much time alienating our clients with our dumb podcast that
and
our
schedule,
only hope.
the podcast schedule. Mm-hmm. I recently got scheduled lately. I was like, hey, so I'm back. I'm back totally freelance, which means my schedule should be freed up. And so this client was like, great. We need editors and producers like into December. When are you available? And then I replied with my availability and they're like, well, it looks like you're not
available.
That
means.
Like between the tour schedule and the recording schedule and all that, like, yeah, not that available.
It's a beast that needs to be fed.
Yeah.
I mean, we're very lucky that we have supporters that are carrying us on their shoulders, but
keeping that heating bill paid.
Yeah. If you've got your finger hovering over the maximumfund.org/donate button and you're wondering whether or not it's worth it, this show will go away if we have to get jobs again.
Things aren't that bleak for us, Ben. They could be worse. They could be like how they are for Voke.
Yeah.
In issue 3 of the Star Trek Discovery series Light of Kalos.
Yeah, we took a brief break to talk about the short trek last episode of Greatest Discovery, but now we are back to finish.
We're going to do that though. Every time there's a short trek, we're going to
will take precedence.
Break in. Yeah.
Yeah. But we are going to finish our review of the Light of Kalos series of comic books.
Yeah, it's a 4-part series where we're going to review issue 3 right now, but it's also out in a handy graphic novel format, so you can buy it all at once.
Yeah, I went out and looked for that at my local comic book shop, and they didn't have it. The one person that was there working at the store was entirely occupied by an older man wearing cargo shorts who was there in the middle of the day, like buying 300 comic books and just talking her ear off. I felt so bad for this young woman. At one point, I was kind of tuning in and out, but at one point I heard him say, "I am thinking about getting a Netflix account."
God, there is. I mean, I think most of us know what comic book guy is like, but I have no idea about what 300 comic books guy is like.
Yeah,
that is an order of magnitude.
Yeah, it was a really serious situation, and I made like a sympathetic expression at at the girl working the register.
You're a real ally, Ben.
She a couple of times, like, you know, put up a finger to pause his kind of unending stream of you know, white guy who doesn't realize nobody is listening to him, and said, "Sir, do you need anything? Are you looking for anything in particular?" And I was like, "Well, I'm looking for those Star Trek Discovery comic books." She said, "Well, those have been out for a long time. If we have any, you know, they would be over in that section." And my search was fruitless, but I could tell that she really wanted me to be more of a lifeline than I was emotionally or temporarily prepared to be.
This brings to mind what could be another rule of Greatest Gen. You and I, Ben, have worked retail jobs before. We've worked with the public. Mm-hmm. We understand how difficult it is.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people, like if they haven't had the server in a restaurant job or the retail experience, might not understand how upsetting their behavior can be.
To treat a person in that kind of position as a captive audience is really unfair.
Yeah.
And it's not fun.
Yeah. Would this be a 4th rule of Greatest Gen?
I think it would be. I think a possible 4th rule of Greatest Gen is when interacting with anyone with a retail job, be polite, be kind, tip well, be brief.
Yeah. Be polite, be kind, tip well. Be brief. I love that.
Yeah. That'll get you really far in life, I think.
So just to recap, do not recline your seat on an airplane. Do not touch the screen on other people's computer monitors. Leave the party without saying goodbye. And when dealing with somebody working in a retail job, be polite, be kind, tip well, be brief.
Yeah, I like it. I'm a big believer in all of those.
Yeah. I was unfortunately unable to get my comic fix there, so I had to download again. Mm. But I did read the final two issues of the Light of Kaelas comics quadrilogy. Do you want to get into it, Adam?
Yeah, let's do it, Ben. The story continues with Laurel talking to Voke about the sort of origin story of Tecuvma, because Voke at this moment in time is going through a little bit of a crisis of confidence.
Yeah, and I sort of realized at this point in the arc what an interesting question that is. Like, who are all these Klingons on the Ship of the Dead in the first episode of Disco? Like, what inspired them to be there for that, and what was, you know, what led up to that moment?
It's so interesting to have that when we watched the episode, I think it was easy to see that these guys were maybe in some kind of weird cult,
right?
But that's not the case at all that Laurel is making.
No, Voke, who is now the leader of that, you know, what we thought of as a cult, is kind of unaware of its ancient history. So when last we left off, Tecuvma was arriving for the wedding of his sister.
Yeah.
We kind of cut right back into that action where he is entering the hall of his house, and this douche that his sister is getting married to has caused all of his brothers to be murdered by Batleth. And, you know, he's got a little bit of a Kung Fu The Legend Continues vibe as he enters this hall. You know, he's in his robes, and he's
and his shower sandals.
Yeah, like I do not want any trouble. You know, he's the guy that walks into a new town every week and doesn't want any trouble, and somehow winds up kicking the ass of every bad guy in the town.
Yeah.
By the time he leaves, seems to be the common denominator in trouble, but we'll take your word for it, Tecuvma.
Tecuvma has to have a kind of "you've changed, man" kind of conversation to Ja'ula, because it wasn't long ago that they were besties, and they had a totally similar worldview.
And not just besties, but she kind of inspired him to take his life on the path that it has been on. Like, he's back from the monastery. He's like really, he's really gone out into the world and learned a bunch of skills, and he has the gravitas to like, you know, just stand there and wait for the Batleths to rain down upon him, you know, because he knows what his sister is going to do. And she yells out just before these Batleths start cutting him up to stop. And so Dolores' henchmen, who all look exactly like him, decide not to kill Tecuvma. And she asks everybody to leave so that she can just kind of have a heart-to-heart with Tecuvma.
It's super fucked that, like, Ja'ula is okay with having her family name be subsumed into Dolores. And in order to do that, like, all the male heirs need to be killed, including Tecuvma.
She's like, listen, for the integrity of our house, in order for all of us in our family to stay rich, we needed to kill most of our family so that I can still be rich.
She is the sort of evil that doesn't recognize her evil ways at all. Like, she just does not grasp it whatsoever. And in a weird way, like, neither does Tecuvma. Like, he doesn't really call her out on her shit. Kung Fu The Legend Continues guy, like you said.
Yeah. He's not coming out with his own opinion on the situation. He's just like letting the fight come to him and then kicking all of the asses in the room.
Yeah.
And the fight that takes place is a knife fight. She starts swinging a blade around at him and wants him to defend himself. You know, she says something about how the monastery really softened him up and made him a real candy ass. And
And that's when he grabs his own knife and starts fighting her. And there's a really intense scene where she swings at him and he catches the blade of her knife in his hand. And he's like, how weak did this monastery make me, in your opinion? Because right now I am defending myself with my bare flesh and holding a knife to your neck.
Pretty great move.
Just do that.
At the point at which Takuvma's knife is at Chaula's neck, they start to hash out the terms of the end of this fight. And they are that...
This was like the one frame that like unintentionally made me laugh because she's just so like pie-faced. Like when he gets the drop on her, like she goes from being like a total badass to just like, duh.
Like, I guess it's all the same if Takuvma beats it with the sarcophagus ship and leaves. Like, it's all the same to Ja'ula.
Right.
And that's the deal he proposes. Ja'ula grants Takuvma the ship and the bodies from the crypt if he'll just get the hell out of Kronos, which he does.
He's like, keep the house, keep the honor. I'm taking all the bodies in the basement and the ship.
And there is nothing about Ja'ula's transformation that would indicate that that would bother her in any way.
Yeah. So it's an interesting origin story for this ship, like how the sarcophagus thing got going.
It really, like a rolling stone gathering moss, the sarcophagus ship really gathers a lot of bodies in short order.
The kind of lighter skinned Klingon that's been the kind of work foreman on the getting the ship back together project.
You're talking about Kel?
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough pill for him and the other workers to swallow initially, right? Like, you don't have a great house anymore? Like, why the fuck would we follow you? And Takuvma is like, hey, like, we're gonna get everybody's ancestors and bolt them to the outside of this ship too. And he's like, well, they're all in pretty crappy looking coffins. Like, they're not in nice fancy sarcophaguses like the members of your family. He says, we could do something about that. And what that means is that Kel is tasked with carving all the sarcophagi, apparently, because that's the only person that shows actually working on one.
Kel not only is the master carver, but as far as the comic books go, like, he's the only one who drags all the sarcophagi to the ship.
Yeah.
Like, no wonder his body's broken down by the end of the next comic. Like, I mean, the work conditions here are not great.
You'd think that a society that has, like, warp drive would have more automation in how they move objects around.
Yeah, there's no honor in automation, I guess.
I guess not.
When they load up the ship full of the sarcophagi, Kel's like, cool, so we're going back to Borath? And Takuvma's like, nah, I've seen all there is to see there. We're going to go look for the Light of Kalis.
Light of Kalis is a beacon that they it's like written in legend, and it's kind of the holy grail in Klingon mythology. If you can light this beacon, you can gather the houses back together and restore the empire to a unified goal. And that's the goal Takuvma sets for himself.
Once they find that light, they're going to need a lighter, though. Where's the lighter? Like an ornately carved Zippo that Kel has made?
The other thing ornately carved in this scene is they pull the armor out, the armor that we get to meet Takuvma in. They've prepared special armor for him, and the red stones on the shoulders are carved from the rock of Kronos.
Takuvma's got to be a little disappointed in this, like someone who's given a very generous gift, but also knows that he's about to be far less comfortable than he's been up to this point. Like, I'm sure there's a hot minute where he's like, no, I mean, the robes are good. I'm good in the robes and the slippers. But they fit him with this exoskeleton of armor.
I thought it would have been pretty fun to see the shopping spree scene, you know, where they're out and Kel is sitting on the round couch and with his arms crossed, and Takuvma keeps coming out of the dressing room in different kinds of armor. Kel keeps shaking his head, and then finally he nods at the correct armor.
Looking good, Takuvma.
Yeah. And then we flash forward a year later. We see Takuvma's big sister pooping a baby out, and they put two different bowls under her, so presumably she could potentially do two babies at once. And I guess that's just canonical Klingon, right?
I mean, it would have to be. Two birth canals make sense. She's also standing up in some kind of giant cribbage board, like with the pegs and the hoop and stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I think that traditionally women have given birth standing up. It's kind of an innovation of the Western medicalization of childbirth, that you're like lying on your back to do it.
Oh.
A lot of the time. I was in a hospital in Kenya one time, and there was a woman in labor, and like they were just walking her around the entire time. And I was like, is there going to be like a point where you put something down underneath just in case? Or I didn't really know what I was looking at. This woman
seemed
very upset.
The first thing you said was like, I'm trying to shoot an interview here. Can you please keep it down?
Yeah. Excuse me, ma'am. I'm from America. And but yeah, the baby comes out, a very pale baby.
Yeah.
A very pale baby indeed. Maybe it makes you wonder if the father that we've been told is the father is in fact the father. We got a little bit of commentary on Voke's skin color in the show. It is implied that it is not necessarily something that would be an advantage for anybody. And, you know, he's kind of treated as a genetic freak a little bit.
Yeah.
So, which caused us to wonder during our last episode about these comics, like, what is the story with this guy with the light skin? Like, how do we explain the fact that nobody is acting weird around him? And this scene maybe obscured that even more. Like, one of the midwives is pretty excited about the skin color of this baby. She says, a portent of greatness to come.
Yeah, the reaction from Delore is not that.
No.
Because the news that he gets is that Ja'ula has gotten rid of it.
Not just gotten rid of it, but it wasn't even alive. And he considers that like a breach of contract. In a, you know, clearly Delore would be like a voting member of the Republican Party. And if he lived in our time and place, like,
sure.
He is very dissatisfied with her inability to give birth in a timely way to an acceptable heir. And so he announces to Ja'ula that what this means is that he is going to end the House of Grach, and he's going to put all of her house's holdings under his own name. And now it is his house and his house alone.
I love this series quite a bit, but to me, this was a part that did not satisfy, because we knew the entire time that Delore was an asshole. Why didn't Ja'ula see that? Why didn't she see the screw job coming? Because she's supposed to be at least as smart as Takuvma.
Yeah, she's like a very savvy person in the first couple of books. And
this moment doesn't serve Ja'ula well at all.
Yeah. It seems like something that I think a more satisfying thing would be that Delore would try something like this, and she would have seen it coming from a mile away, and mm-hmm. like had an arrangement to undercut it.
Yeah.
In place, you know?
Yeah.
But instead it just kind of makes her look like a dummy, which is kind of unfortunate, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it undercuts a lot of work that they put into her character in the first couple issues.
Well, we cut back to Voke and Laurel, and Voke is pretty outraged by the turn this story has made, because he really identifies with this baby with the weird skin color, him being a weird skin color himself. He can't see something that we can see, which is that this baby's loaf is very similar to his own.
Right.
But Laurel is like, you know, listen, like the moral of the story is not that like Dolor and Jaula are bad. It's that Takuvma is good. Like he saw the power in you, and that's what like sets him apart from other Klingons.
I really like the symmetry of friendships that we see in these two issues, because we get Voke and Laurel as like the underpinning of the entire story, but the Kel and Takuvma relationship is an enduring concern as well. Like, because the button on the issue is that, you know, Kel is continuing his optimism about finding the beacon. They've searched and searched and they can't find it, but his optimism is the thing that keeps Takuvma going. Right up to the moment where they find the Federation communication relay that we recognize from the first episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see, you know, the power behind the throne when Takuvma first started his crusade.
It feels like we're tantalizingly close to the TV series timeline, which is a lot of fun too.
Yeah. So that's issue 3.
Yeah. You want to go on to issue 4?
I wouldn't mind. What do you think?
Let's just end it there.
Weird that the Star Trek The Next Generation music played when we ended it there. Why was that?
So this is the 4th book of 4.
Yeah. And like all of these books, we are back on the beat-up Ship of the Dead post-Battle of the Binary Stars. And it's Laurel and Voke.
The Jalopy, and it's spelled like J apostrophe L-O-P-P. L-O-P-P-I, so it's Klingon.
Here on the Jalopy, there is no 6CD changer. There is no power window.
Jalopy!
Laurel is making the case that it's okay for Voke to have doubts because Takuvma did too. He's like, it's all right, man. Like, you don't have to have 100% confidence all the time. That doesn't make you a bad leader. I think she makes the case that, like, even great leaders have their doubts. I'd think you're a crazy person if you didn't have a moment of doubt.
Yeah, I really like this. The, you know, like her kind of shoving him into responsibility, you know, whether he likes it or not, you know, like he is the anointed one after the passing of Takuvma, and therefore needs to start kind of thinking in bigger terms.
Three-dimensional terms, even.
Shit, dog.
Takuvma sees the listening post as an act of war. And this is pretty consistent with his feelings in Star Trek Discovery's premiere episode. Like,
I really liked how in the artwork, like they beam, presumably they either beam aboard this satellite or they, mm-hmm. you know, tractor beam it aboard or something. But like the black parts of the satellite are not the same tone of black as the black parts of the Klingon ship. Like it looks like it's in a different, almost like a different color temperature,
yeah.
The way it's lit, which is really interesting from an artistic standpoint. Like, I don't think of, you know, it's something you have to think about all the time when you're shooting video is color temperature, because incandescent lights that we use to light our homes and that we use on sound stages and stuff are much warmer than sunlight. Sunlight is very blue compared to indoor lighting. And I liked the idea that the Federation's objects would look different under Klingon lighting than Klingon shit.
That's a great point. There's a house on my street that I drive past most days, and if I drive past it at night,
yeah.
I can see into like their living room. And what you notice when you drive past this house is that all of their bulbs are 5,600K cool bulbs.
Oh, God.
And it's like unmistakable, because it really catches the eye when you drive down a street and like...
Everything,
you know,
is amber and glowy. And then there's one house that looks like a clinic.
It's shocking. I can't imagine coming home from work to... an interior that's lit at that color temperature, it's such a difference. And like when you go to a home improvement store and you buy light bulbs, it's crazy to me that there are so many bulbs in that color temperature that you can buy stocked right next to the warmer tone bulbs that are intended for the insides of homes.
And I think a lot of people don't realize what the difference is because they just have never had like a first day of cinema lighting class, you know?
Yeah, you really tell the difference when you plug one of those in, though.
A memory of you that I will always cherish is took me into the downstairs bathroom in your house that you'd recently installed four light bulbs in.
Uh-huh.
And you switched on the light and you said these came out of the same box and three of them were one color temperature and one of them was a different color temperature, and it just fucking drove you up the wall. And if I ever just need to like brighten my day a little bit, I'll think about how perturbed you were.
Wouldn't you be perturbed by that?
I would absolutely. But also, like, I think if either of our wives installed those four light bulbs, they would turn them on and be totally satisfied that they, like, lit the room up. Like,
that was just it. Like, I knew my audience. I wouldn't tell that to just anyone, but
yeah.
But Benjamin R. Harrison deserves an explanation.
We're weird that we notice it, is the moral of the story. It makes me feel close to you.
I mean, a hole in the drywall would be as noticeable to me as this fourth light. And you want to know something? I still haven't replaced it because it's such a pain in the ass to get inside the fixture to do so.
Ah.
I need to just put that on the list of things to do.
You got
to
bite the bullet. Yeah. I mean, the company needs to know that they have a quality control problem first and foremost.
I'm sure they'll be happy to hear from me. Excuse me. I'm not sure if you're familiar with color temperatures. Yeah, like they want to be light-splained.
Yeah. This satellite is emphatically a listening post. It's there to gather data, and it's very close to the Klingon side of the line. And T'Kuvma really identifies his potential enemy in this thing.
Yeah.
You know, despite the fact that it is just a box with a bunch of cameras on it, it really makes him get a hate on for humans. You know, he really hates the fact that they just like sent this thing out here to like keep an eye on things without, you know, coming and defending it and, you know, standing on their principles or whatever.
Yeah, it kind of represents a form of cowardice to him. Like why stick an unmanned listening post? What a bunch of bullshit. Like he doesn't see the Federation as having any sort of honor in this way of doing their business.
But speaking of societies with no honor, we get a little montage as Laurel describes how T'Kuvma's legend grew, and it shows some stuff that was going on in the Klingon Empire that is pretty fucked up. Like slavery is depicted, and in the midst of depicting slavery, they kind of imply that T'Kuvma was killing slavers and breaking the chains of those who were in bonds. It shows like kind of almost like a Roman gladiator style fight between two naked ladies and T'Kuvma presumably chopping the head off of the fat cat that was running that as an entertainment and taking those ladies into his crew. The rumor apparently gets out among the Klingon people that T'Kuvma is going around calling himself Kaelas and saying that he is like the reincarnated soul of Kaelas.
Is that stolen valor?
And this is totally uncool.
Well, it would be stolen valor if it was true, but it's not totally clear that it is.
Yeah.
Like anytime we see him, he denies that. But all, you know, it's like one of those things where like a rumor about him getting started that may help him and he doesn't do anything to dispel it.
Yeah.
Could be, you know, that could be the case. I think that the comic leaves that open to interpretation.
And like entrenched powers start to notice. Like, yeah. this is a form of political pressure and populism taking shape.
And so we get to see what that looks like. We get to see the High Council, and it is a much bigger and grander thing than we've ever seen in a television show.
Like, yeah, it's cool.
It's a lot of people. It's a big, big hall, and they're basically talking about, you know, they're like asking Ja'ula to comment on what's going on. Like, I guess the emperor or the chancellor or something is asking for her thoughts on the matter, and Kor is there. We finally get to see Kor, and he's writing for Ja'ula, could potentially even be in league with Takuvma, given what we know about their family relationship. He's you know, about to land his big political jab when the doors of the hall open, and Takuvma walks in resplendent in his crazy battle armor.
It's a real moment of, if anyone has any reason why these two should not be wed, kind of moment. Kor is always terrifying, isn't he? And they draw him really, really well here.
Yeah, he really looks exactly like he does in the show, which, like, I think Takuvma, like, there are some drawings where they totally nail him, but yeah. Other drawings where he doesn't really look like himself.
Right.
And Kor is dope in every picture.
So Takuvma bursts in, calling the High Council on their bullshit, and he's got a warning, and the warning is that the Federation is ready to strike, but the Klingons are too fractured to do anything about it.
Yeah.
So what he proposes is that there's a way to beat back this threat, and that is unification behind him. And the Chancellor's like, sure, man, whatever you say, like, we'll unify against this made-up threat once you find this pretend beacon you've been looking for. Like, he doesn't give a shit. Like, he's ready to agree to the terms as they're stated because he doesn't believe any of what Takuvma's talking about is real.
He doubts that Takuvma has any follow-through.
Yeah.
Chancellor is also a little bit of a rube himself. Like, you kind of wonder how this guy gathered this much political power around himself, and he's like, what's that chanting?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it might be the setup for, like, Takuvma's masterstroke from a political standpoint.
There's, like, a million Klingon march outside.
Yeah.
In progress.
Yeah. And it really is, like, that kind of scale, because they're up on, like, the ziggurat that the Klingon High Council presumably meets in, and as far as the eye can see, the crowd is there riding for Takuvma.
I really like this frame. Like, the depiction of that many people and that kind of density seems really hard to depict.
Yeah.
But you really get it.
What's going on in that other ziggurat?
That's the overflow, Ben. If you don't have tickets to the main ziggurat, you can watch it on closed circuit television.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the press ziggurat.
Yeah.
Kor is really, like, anti-populist. He's like, you know, you got a crowd of angry people here, but that's why are you threatening us like that? You know, it's a fair point, but a little bit rich coming out of the mouth of the guy that was talking about just putting Takuvma's head on a spike a couple of pages ago.
Yeah, agreed. Before Takuvma beats feet in the sarcophagus ship, he picks up a couple of stragglers. Because why not? There's room for all on the good ship sarcophagus.
Yeah, and a young boy of a particular complexion is among those stragglers. And this is when Voke becomes a member of the Takuvma Project.
Yeah, origin story of Voke. He also says goodbye to Ja'ula, and in doing so, nukes their relationship. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer family after this.
I no longer have a sister is the last thing he says to her.
Yeah. Pretty rough stuff, but deserved, because Ja'ula's been pretty awful.
And it takes like they've been searching for the beacon for a long time and haven't found it yet. And he's got kind of the like he's got like the all the confidence of faith that he will find it.
Mm-hmm.
But his little buddy Kel is like not going to leave this kind of project up to faith. And he has, in the years that they've been searching, apparently there's a big enough hangar somewhere on the ship that he has secretly hand-carved a colossal, like, four-story beacon of Kaelas.
He's an old man.
Yeah.
Why is he doing this kind of work?
Well, you know, old guys love whittling.
Maybe I can whittle wood with you sometime, cool buddy?
This thing is massive and ornate.
Stick.
Good job by Kel.
Yeah.
At first, Takuma's like, fuck this. Like, I don't need a fake beacon. We're going to find the real thing. But Kel's like, look, man, could it be that the beacon is inside you?
Remember all those guys on Borath saying that the light inside you was the light of Kaelas?
Doesn't matter if you found the beacon or not. If it's in here...
Forget the ring. It's Bubkiss. I found it in a box of Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, it's at this moment that that Takuma like appreciates the true power that he's had the whole time.
Yeah,
you don't find it without, you find it within.
But this is a real shocker for Vogue.
Yeah, he is pissed because he feels lied to.
He considers it a total betrayal. Like, you know, he really believed that they found this ancient artifact, and you know. Takuvma led everybody to believe that they found this ancient artifact.
And because the past and the present storylines have been driving in cars that are side by side, like, Laurel makes the case to Vogue that it's not about whether or not the beacon was a Fregese. Like, it's that the plan united the houses and it worked. Like, much like your plan, Vogue, to unite the houses and continue this mission must work. Because it's you. Laurel is drawing the comparison between Takuvma and Vogue so as to prop up his confidence, and Vogue comes around to the idea.
We only know that Vogue comes around to the idea because of what happens in the show, because the button on the series is a final page in which we just get off-screen dialogue from somebody telling Takuvma that they have a Federation ship on their scans. And they've parked the beacon in a crowded asteroidy place, just like we open on in the beginning of Disco. And Takuvma gives the order, light the beacon, and we get like a close up on his eyes. And it's not the end, Adam. It's the beginning.
Why, if you're Takuvma, would you ever allow Kor to be on your ship? You know?
Yeah. Keep Kor out of there.
Kor's an asshole who hates him. That seems like a bad decision by Takuvma. Did you like these issues, Ben?
I did. I thought that was really interesting backstory on the light of Kaelas. Like, mm-hmm. That it's not about like what it is, but what it represents to people.
Yeah.
It really sympathizes Takuvma in a lot of ways. Like he's kind of the hero of this series, and he's a dude that caused a lot of bad shit in the TV show. But it's interesting to see what inspired him and what his goals were. And I like that it forces Vogue to have a nuanced understanding of both Takuvma and his job as the leader of in Takuvma's stead, you know?
Yeah.
And I liked that it left it totally ambiguous what, if any, Vogue's relationship to Kel was, and whether or not Vogue is in fact the baby that Ja'ula gave birth to.
Yeah.
Like it's very heavily implied, but it is never, they never draw a bright line between one and the other.
Yeah, I like that. When I think back on the first two episodes of Discovery, so much time was spent aboard the sarcophagus ship giving us the motivations that T'Kuvma has for his actions.
Yeah.
But those motivations are so shallow in retrospect. There's so much more there that we can't possibly understand. It's really nice to get the full depth of reasoning behind those things. And I think, I might like to return to first season of Discovery to see if these four issues improve episodes that I already really like, because I think they would. I think this is good stuff. This doesn't feel like tacked on periphery storyline stuff. Like, this isn't bottle episode comic book making. This is like, we're really drawing some lines here.
Yeah.
And it's effective and good.
I'm glad they exist.
They feel essential.
I would really encourage, I'm not much of a comic book reader, but I would really encourage anybody that liked Discovery to check these out, because I think they're pretty terrific.
Yeah, agreed.
We come in peace.
Well, Adam, do you want to see if we have any priority one messages for this episode of The Greatest Discovery?
Gotta do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Hey, look at that. We've got one. It's from the Warm Honeyed Bosom, and it is to the Warm Honeyed Bosom. So a recursive P1. And it's pretty... I mean, like, we actually got to meet, like, most of the Warm Honeyed Bosom at this point.
I was now that we've pulled been out. Close into the bosom.
Yeah. We got to see the Binturong scar, and we got to be a part of an engagement story, Adam.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. We both got Warm Honeyed Bosom t-shirts out of the deal.
I'm never going to forget that Atlanta show.
Yeah. The message goes like this. And Irby Spicy said, "All right," and there was light, and it was all right. With much pushing and some moose lube TM, were birthed two couples, countless friends, and a new family forever. From mind melds to punchy koala to dick slugs to Manfreds, we have evolved into the unstoppable killing, I mean loving machine, that we are today. Hashtag no deads. Happy bosomversary. Hashtag not a cult. Binturong. And Binturong is spelled all caps with an H at the end.
Binturong.
Who do you seek?
Binturong.
You know, hashtag not a cult doesn't give me a lot of confidence that this is not a cult.
Yeah. You say hashtag not a cult. We say, what is this room full of 100 people in Atlanta all wearing the same t-shirt?
Why do they keep forcing this applesauce on me?
Why do you guys all have the same haircut? What's that about? Well, if you'd like to leave a priority one message for a cult or not a cult, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message, $200 for a commercial message. It keeps the lights on around here at The Greatest Discovery. Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a comic book drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I don't know what to call this guy. I don't know if he ever gets named or anything. So
sounds like we got a visual.
Well, yeah, his is the either the Chancellor or the Emperor, I guess. And it's just for that, not seeing the trap he's about to fall into, going, "Whoa, what's that noise outside the chamber?" Not great to have your, play right into your political rival's hand that drastically. And I would imagine that a person as powerful as whatever this guy has as his job would know not to do something like that. Some kind of chanting? How about yourself, Adam?
The one character's motivations that I really don't ever understand are Jaula's. Like, she watches all of the male heirs in her family get murdered and still seems like, yeah, Dolores is a pretty groovy guy. You just don't know him like I do.
Yeah, like, why? Her plan is not going great. Like, she starts this series going like, we're going to make our house go back to being a going concern by fixing the ship up and like inspiring the peasants and whatnot.
We never get even a sniff of her being jealous of the nobility in the first issue or two, which would satisfactorily sell me on the idea that she's willing to trade her life in for like wealth and nobility, even if it means sacrificing the name of her house. Like,
right.
There's just something about her sacrifice that didn't quite add up to me. And you know what? You could fix it by either front-loading it a little bit with her jealousy.
Right, or being greedier at the beginning.
Or by, like, having her totally sprung on Delore. But we never see either of those.
Right.
It's a business
transaction. Yeah, Delore never seems great.
Yeah, but it could be interesting if he was.
Right. If he had like a ton of charisma.
If he had a great big two dicks. Yeah. So I think Jaula is my Shimoda.
Very nice. So Adam, the next episode of Discovery will be just before the next episode of Short Treks comes out. So we got to come up with something to do for that episode, but it's not going to be a Short Treks ep.
I mean, I feel bad about doing a Short Treks Greatest Discovery 2 weeks after that Short Treks comes out. Doesn't seem right.
Yeah, but also we've got some time to kill before actual show starts coming out.
Yeah.
So we'll only give ourselves time to formulate our thoughts by the next episode. Do we want to do that Stamets comic book in the meantime?
Yeah, I'm into that. Let's do it.
Okay. So for the next episode, we will be reading the Star Trek Discovery Annual, which is another comic book by the same folks involved in the series that we've already read. Kristen Bayer, Mike Johnson, and Angel Hernandez. And I think this one is all about Stamets and Hugh Culber.
I'm really liking reading through all these comics. I think before we started, I was a little apprehensive about whether or not it would be a good use of time, but I think we've been rewarded with some really great storytelling here. I dig them.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it because I really like Stamets and Culber as characters. I'm excited to see more about them.
More Black Toothbrush origin stories.
Yeah.
Give us 16 pages on that toothbrush.
Would love to get to the bottom of that.
And with that, I think we'll toss it over to Rob.
Yeah, fun ep. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Rob.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. It's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte, and our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show. Or you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Please use the hashtag GreatestGen or GreatestDiscovery when tweeting about the show. See you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.